Later, Valentine and Colonel Bloom talked about it in the dispensary as a nurse put cold towels on Valentine's bruises and dabbed his cuts with iodine.
I figured pressure must have been building up in you somewhere.
I don't remember feeling any kind of presence. I just had all these doubts all of a sudden. I thought it was because it was the first time I was in command.
I'm sure that helped. The Kurians know what they're doing. They attack when someone is most vulnerable. It's how they fight. No need to beat us if we beat ourselves.
Boy, when it came out, it was like a fire hose. I feel better than I have for weeks. I remember you were saying something about an operation.
We found the Kurians' temporary hideout. Dumb luck, really. It's in a unique-looking town, as seen from above. Of course, there's a big radio mast, so it makes sense that he would be there.
And we're waiting for what, exactly?
Your orders.
Given. Let's get this brigade of ours back into the war.
I'd like permission to accompany the Bears.
No. I'll send that Duvalier. She's very good, and she knows the country. Besides, I need you here. I was looking at the map, and there's a nice notch in the ridge ahead. We could use a rest from moving, and I think with some flank security, we could mess with the pursuit. The thought scared me before, but now I want to take a crack at them. They're so used to us running after brief holding actions, we might catch them strung out.
Valentine passed a busy, sleepless night in the command tent. While Gamecock and Duvalier, guided by a trio of wolves, headed for LaGrange, Bloom turned the brigade and launched an exploratory attack on Moondagger reconnaissance following them up the road. Then Javelin took a much-needed rest while waiting for the Bears to return. Scavenging parties found green apples and early squash to eat. The fall's first bounty was coming in. The hours dragged as Valentine experienced the doubts of a man who'd rather be on the job himself than sending others into danger. He gnawed on an apple core, reducing it by tiny shavings, waiting for the party's return. Bee sensed his mood and tried to comb out his hair and pick ticks. They had returned in at dusk, one bear short and Duvalier limping on a twisted ankle. Gamecock, thick with smoke and dirt, gave a brief report, with his man Silvertip standing silently behind. Silvertip looked like he'd spent the morning wrestling mountain lions.
Town had a Moondagger garrison, but they were living it up in the roadhouse at the edge of town. Sure enough, there was a little Kurian blister on the antenna made out of whatever crap they use as tentin'. They'd camouflaged it like an eagle nest.
I've heard of some kind of specially trained bug that excretes Kurian cocoons. No reapers?
The cat took the one jumping from a roof. She gave us the all clear, even with her bum foot. I sent the Bears right for the antenna with demo gear. There were some sentries, but we disposed of them with flashbangs and blades.
Did you blow the nest?
Yeah, but it ran before then, went sliding down one of the support wires, or whatever you call them, sir. Gutsy little shit.
You saw it?
No! Silvertip did. A reaper hauled out of town like he was carrying hot coals. Silvertip managed to trip him up.
Very commendable.
Now, I don't train my Bears for dumb. Reaper running for the line like that, he looped a satchel charge on him. Of course, the thing animating the Reaper had us on his mind, so he didn't notice. It dropped onto the Reaper's head and shoulders. Looked like an umbrella collapsing on him.
Eh, look back at me with all them eyes?
I don't think they're all eyes.
Well, anyway, it was watching me take pot shots, carried like a baby with tentacles, when the charge blew. Reaper's head went straight up like a rocket.
Best stick I ever saw, sir.
What happened after that?
We knocked off three more Reapers pretty easy. Sprayed fire into their shins and then took them out with explosives. The Moondagger started tracking us on the way back, but the wolves got a twist on them. Those boys are cruel, but they sure don't know much about fighting.
All that remained was the decision about Red Dog. Valentine had him return to his old company for a last meal together. He explained the situation to Rand and asked for a volunteer to shoot the poor hound.
The whole brigade likes Red Dog, sir. Not the mutt's fault he's a Kurian spy.
It's just a dog. I'll kill it myself if I have to.
The Kurian's dead, right? Whatever connection he had is gone. And maybe the Miskatonic would want to study it.
It's too much of a risk. One of you might fall asleep petting him and wake up kissing a fused grenade.
I'll take the chance, sir. Like the lieutenant said, the Miskatonic should have a look at him. I'm stubborn, and Ford and Chevy, well, I don't know that even a Kurian could make them much more confused unless there are bullets flying, food to be eaten, or a she-grog around.
What about you?
What, sir, and have me lose faith in the cause? That train long since departed. Besides, I'd like to have a word or two with one of them Kurian sucks.
Valentine looked at Red Dog, utterly uncognizant of his peril, but evidently just as happy to be with the old company as parked outside headquarters with the engineering gear.
I guess one more ex-Quisling won't hurt.
The banks of the Green River, September. The fortunes of Javelin are at their lowest ebb. Help from the Legworm Ranchers has all but dried up. Only the underground dares to make contact, informing Southern Command's forces where they've hidden supplies. The trickle of foodstuffs, plus the usual resourcefulness of soldiers to find food even on the march, allows Javelin to stay together in body. Its soul is another matter. The Moondaggers have stepped up their harassment. They shift south and west faster than the brigade can move, herding the column north when it wants to go south. It's too dangerous to send out patrols. Only the wolves and cats leave the column. Even Valentine's company keeps close, scavenging such towns and camps as they temporarily occupy. Even Vet, who grew up in Kentucky, was lost near Campbellsville. The men are bearded, dirty, tired. Their rope may not have run out yet, but the tattered end is in view. Wounded, sick, and injured are either hidden with the underground or carried along. The engineers, with their usual flair for improvisation, have rigged the legworms with yokes that allow them to carry wounded swinging from hammocks, a smoother ride for the injured than the ambulance trucks. They're far from home, far from sound, and far from those dreams of becoming ranchers and whiskey barons. It's all they can do to keep moving, keep securing bridges and hill gaps, and keep the rear guard supplied in its endless leapfrogs while delaying the Moondaggers behind and at the flanks. They fought three skirmishes, and each time were forced to retreat by the Moondaggers bringing up reinforcements by truck.
Fall back! Fall back!
They dug in triple lines of entrenchments on good ground to move a little more north until their line of march was north-northwest. The roads they needed to take came under long-range artillery fire, and the bridges and fords they wanted to use were mined or destroyed. Then came the day when the scouts returned from the outskirts of Bowling Green with a special one-sheet newspaper speaking of a pitched battle in Pennsylvania. So-called terrorists out of New England had been soundly beaten. Over 1,000 captured and the rest scattered in a panicked flight north. It was dreadfully specific in its maps and photographs.
I don't suppose any of your old church buddies are in these pictures, Brother Mark.
They went on emergency short rations that day. The Legworm clans had stuck a wetted finger in the air and knew which way the wind was blowing. Even the bulletproof began to suffer desertions. What was worse, sometimes they took their worms with them. Valentine sat in the headquarters tent, with eyes closed and his fingers pressed to his temples.
Coming up on the 5 o'clock news, James Henderson reports on the record harvest in the Dakotas, where farmers have smashed their quotas by over 16%. Also, we learn more about the state-of-the-art legworm freeze-drying facility in the capital. And finally, more on the mass call-up of local heroic militia units to deal with the catastrophic flooding across the south. Stay tuned.
The fall weather had been the one thing that had been kind to the brigade in their trip across Kentucky. Such an obvious lie gave Valentine hope that the Legworm Riders were attacking the lines.
Hey, Val.
Valier?
You know your plan to have the Legworm Ranchers fight the Moondaggers?
It's more of a hope than a plan.
Well, maybe the Currians are waiting for the same thing to happen to us. Or their generals, high church people, whatever. A lot of them believe their own propaganda. They probably think we're stealing everything that isn't nailed down on this march. When we're not doing that, we're chopping down trees so we can stomp the baby worms.
How'd you come by this?
I sat in on a church question night. Ever been to one of those?
I don't think so.
They're pretty interesting. You write down questions and a priest picks them out of a box and answers them.
That's a foolproof system.
The questions smacked of being pre-selected. Right after a question about our column was another one asking what was being done about it. You haven't killed a bunch of strongbows, did you?
No, we've been out of their territory for days. I don't think we even talked to any.
Well, the church is blaming it on you. Also some kidnappings in Glasgow.
We never even saw the town. The Moondaggers had it occupied before we even got there. The kidnappings. They wouldn't be young women by any chance.
Yes, they're kind of worked up about it.
Worked up. What would it take to push them beyond worked up? He got an idea. An ugly, hurtful idea. Was Valentine a doer or a shirker? What was the price of his honor? Was it worth more than the survival of his comrades? Within an hour, he was where the medical staff had unhammocked the patients and unburdened their worms. Valentine looked at the three fresh bodies, good Southern command men who traded in all their tomorrows for the cause, hating himself. They gave up their lives for their comrades in the brigade. Would they object to their bodies being of further use?
Doctor, I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you for the use of three bodies.
What do you have in mind, Major?
Nothing you want to know about, Doctor. They'll be treated respectfully, don't worry.
Valentine knew the Moondagger Patrol would never have a chance. Reports from the Legworm Liaison said they were being supplied by the Green River Clan. Valentine chose the spot for the ambush well. He used Legworm Pasture along the most open stretch of road he could find, just east of a crossroads where other patrols might see and investigate smoke from three directions. A collapsed barn and an intact aluminum chicken coop stood opposite his position, off the road by about 50 yards. His company, armed with the weapons meant for trade, backed up by Glass's pair with their machine guns, lay under piles of brush taken from legworm deposits, using the tiny hummocks off the snake-like legworm trails to rest their rifles. With one squad left guarding his escape and evasion trail, Valentine had three parallel kill zones set up, anchoring their flanks with the 50 calibers. Once the men were put into position, he and Rand had hurried, laying brush across the groups of prone men. The three-truck, one-car patrol was heading east, which struck him as strange. Better for him. They were coming off the rise 6 miles to the southeast, a good place to observe a long stretch of the Green River Valley. They had a single anti-aircraft cannon as armament mounted in the bed of a heavy-duty pickup. Just behind the cannon truck, the rest of the men rode in the beds of the armored double-axle trucks. Old mattresses and spare tires hung from aluminum skirting as improvised armor. Valentine waited to detonate the mine until the cannon truck was over the old soda can that served as a marker. The mine was simple TNT, placed under a thin coat of gravel in the potholed road. The truck tipped onto its side. The other vehicles turned off the road, facing the buildings at an angle. The men dismounted to the side facing Valentine's line.
Antenna!
The platoon fired on the command car. Valentine saw blood spatter the windows as the glass cracked and fell. The 50 calibers completed the execution begun by rifle fire. The Grogs employed their guns like tripod-mounted rifles, firing single, precise shots, sniping over open sights. Valentine went forward with his machine pistol, leading a maneuver team with Patel offering support fire. A shielded machine gun sprang up from the bed of the foremost of the trucks, almost like a jack-in-the-box as it unfolded. Valentine dropped down. The gunner made the mistake of swinging his weapon at the movement, exposing himself. Valentine watched invisible hands tug at the gunner's clothes, and the gunner went down. Through the gap under the truck, Valentine saw two figures running for the old, half-collapsed barn. He took careful aim.
Cease fire! Cease fire!
Valentine waved Rutherford and DuSable forward. They put their auto-loading shotguns to their shoulders and stepped out. They took turns covering each other as they checked the cabins of the vehicles.
Everything all right up there?
Thought he moved.
This one's wounded bad. Sorry, bro.
I give up!
Take that man prisoner.
Roger that, Major Valentine.
The bearded man had a sort of a long scarf about his neck. Valentine thought he might have been in the gun truck. He looked dazed, but could walk. He wouldn't slow them up. Headquarters could figure out what to do with him.
We're clear to this end, sir.
Easy part's over.
I admire your definition of hard, sir.
While scouts watched the road, the men worked in pairs, loading bodies into one truck. Then they backed it into the barn. Valentine nodded to Patel. It was time for them to go to work. Meanwhile, Glass brought forward the dead bodies they had taken out of camp, now clad in legworm leather vests and soft boots, such as the locals favored. He dropped them in a shallow ditch near the road. They had assorted hooks and chains looped or stuffed in their pockets. The Moondagger bodies were hung upside down from the rafters. Valentine and Patel moved down the line, slitting each throat and letting the blood run onto the barn floor. Then Valentine started cutting off beards. He'd mutilated bodies before, for effect, in Santo Domingo. Then he'd only been risking his soul. From what he understood of the Moondaggers, their retribution would be swift and merciless. Valentine could picture the local reprisals easily enough. Moitana's description of their tactics had plenty of historical precedent. People herded into old church buildings and burned, executions against town square walls worthy of Goya. Who bore the responsibility? The agent provocateur or the troops? The Moondaggers would claim that if there had been no attack, there would be no reprisal. Valentine took off another beard. Easier than skinning rabbits. No legs to deal with. Just a long circular cut of the knife from one corner of the mouth, down the throat, and then back up to the other corner of the mouth. The bodies were still warm, and he could smell their dried sweat. The cloying aroma of death wouldn't begin to rise for some hours yet. For now, they smelled like blood and diapers. Rand came to the door of the barn, blocking the daylight coming through the gap between the truck and the post.
Sir, there's a radio in the command car that's still working.
Put Preville on it. Have them listen to chatter and see if they know about the ambush.
Will do, sir.
Valentine's sense of honor wasn't taken word for word from the Southern Command officer's epitome. It was instead like a jigsaw collage from three or four different puzzles, all half-formed but recognizable pictures. Some came from his parents, others from Father Max, more from his training, a few from his experiences in the Kurian Zone. Of course, he'd done despicable things in the past. He'd bled men who had no more of a chance of fighting back than bound pigs, twisted cross lying in their tanks in a basement in Omaha. He'd tortured. He'd acted as judge, jury, and executioner over Mary Carlson's killers. He had helped the overlord Kurian in Seattle wipe out Adler and his staff. Each time, one bit of his conscience or another had plucked at him. He'd burned with regret later, thinking back on what he'd done. But necessity compelled and partially excused him. But this time, all of the jigsaw pieces agreed. This setup of the Green River Clan stripped him of whatever scarecrow of his honor had remained. He decided that the brigade's survival required a sacrifice. Of his honor. More important, of some members of the Green River Clan. Wide-eyed children would be fed into war's furnace as a result of a ploy that couldn't even promise victory. Or was it really for the brigade? Do you need to be proven right this badly, David Stewart Valentine? Tip over the first domino in what you hope will be a series of massacres, followed by ambush, followed by another massacre, until these beautiful green hills run with blood? He'd have to shave with his eyes shut from now on.
I think I've gone crazy, Patel.
You remember Lugger from the Hobbs Old Company?
Yes.
She was on the Kansas operation. She saw what the Moondaggers did there. Entire towns herded out into athletic fields and machine gunned. She was on a scout and came into one of those ghost towns after. Saw Kurian cameras vidding the bodies as guys posing as Southern Command POWs confessed to the killings. Sometimes they took out towns that weren't even in the fight. Just did it to make a point.
And?
These guys earned their killing. This is just interest on their deposit.
What about the Green River Clan?
David, worrying now will not alter the future. We must wait and see what happens. The Moondaggers might wonder about a couple of large caliber holes in their trucks and where a gang of legworm ranchers got a wireless detonator. Maybe we'll get lucky and they'll see through this charade. They might stop dancing around, hurting us, and try to settle things in one fight. I would very much like to see these bastards attack into overlapping fields of fire and proper artillery spotting.
I don't think we'd win that.
Perhaps not, but it would make a lot of people in Kansas feel better, knowing how many we took with us. I wonder if they have the heart for it, despite all their shrieks and prayers and bluster. Like most bullies, they're at their most bloodthirsty when striking the defenseless. And do not forget, the legworm clans around here know how to fight and will not be as easily herded as populations brought up at the Kurian
Major?
What is it, Preville?
I got some comm traffic I think you should hear.
Roger, I'll be right there. Patel, can you finish up here?
Yes, sir, Major Valentine.
Valentine left the half-collapsed abattoir gladly. The revolutionary's morality clung to his back, a heavier burden than any he'd ever carried while training with the wolves. The command car smelled like stale cigar smoke and blood. It had a side that opened up, rather like the hot dog trucks Valentine had seen in Chicago, turning the paneling of the vehicle into a table and a sheltering overhang where the radio operator could sit out of the rain. The radio had a bullet hole in it, but somehow was still functioning.
Are they on their way here, Preville?
Not sure, sir.
Group Q, What is the status of the reprisal against the Mammoth?
Gods be praised, we are hitting them, brother. There's a lot of shooting. Q4 is in the camp now. Sniper fire has delayed them dynamite and the remaining livestock.
Valentine smiled. Legworms took a lot of killing. He wondered if the Moondaggers knew just how long-lived a Kentucky feud could be.
Is that you, Rafe?
No, brother, he's been wounded. Even the boys here can hit a target at 200 meters. They vanish into the woods and hills, and the trackers do not return.
Where's that signal coming from, Preble? Is this Group Q in the Green Riverlands?
No, sir. Due north, little northeast towards Frankfort. I'd say it's coming from the other side of our column. This is the channel the radio was on.
Patrol L6. L6, you are overdue at Zulu. Report, please. Patrol L6, report, please. We are listening on alternative frequency, Rook.
Valentine looked at the dashboard of the command car. A card with L6 written on it stood in a holder.
Guess they didn't get off a report after all.
They listened for a few more minutes. They heard complaints about blown-up bridges and roads filled with cut-down trees. A mobile fueling station had been blown up. Kentucky, it seemed, had finally had enough of the Moondaggers.
I want to talk to the prisoner.
The prisoner had a scuffed look about him. His eyes widened as he saw Valentine approach. Valentine looked down. His uniform was something of a mess. Valentine cleaned his blade off on the man's shoulder.
I'm not going to hurt you. All I want is a news report.
News report?
Yes. You know, like on the television. You've watched television.
Okay.
Give me the highlights from Kentucky.
The worm herders, they're fighting with us. Our Supreme, he says to teach him a lesson. But from that lesson, we must give 5 more lessons, and then 50. So now we have to call in many more reinforcements. There's lots of fighting everywhere. Here one day, there another. I'm diligent. I'm peaceable. I only follow orders.
Valentine tried to get more out of him. Places, clans, the nature of the reinforcements. But he was just a youth, taught little more than to follow orders, line up to eat, obey his faith, and of course, shoot.
Let's get him back to headquarters. Give him a little food and water. Looks like he could use it.
Did I pass my test?
Come again.
The gods, they always test us, both with blessings and misfortunes. Either can lead you from the righteous path.
On that, we're agreed.
I was afraid you'd kill me and I would not be taken to higher glory by the angel's mercy. I still have a chance to make something of my death.
Valentine felt like slapping some sense into the hopeful young brown eyes, but he could almost hear Father Max asking for a little understanding, just as he had when Valentine complained as a 16-year-old about his first and second year students' haphazard efforts with their literacy homework. He left the prisoner and his disquieting thoughts and plunged into planning a route back to the brigade. The banks of the Ohio, October, the 55th year of the Currian Order. The long retreat ended somewhere southeast of Evansville. The events of the first week of October 2077 are still a matter of dispute among historians. Clever shift or desperate flight? The Moondaggers juggled their forces with the energy and ferocity for which they were famous, cutting off each sidle by the spent Javelin Brigade, shifting troops down the Ohio or up the Tennessee, until the retreat ground to a halt near a small heartland city that seemed to grow more by virtue of nothing else within an easy distance than any particular advantage of situation or resource. The Moondaggers accomplished all this even with their supply lines snipped and chewed, responding with harshness that to this day leads to a fall blood moon being called a dagger's moon all across Kentucky. In a last gambit, the column turned almost due north, hoping the Moondaggers would not expect a movement toward Illinois. But the ploy failed, and the Moondaggers found the brigade trapped on the south bank of the Ohio. Both sides dug in and prepared for the inevitable. The camp is not well ordered. Sandwiched in a fold of ground hiding them from both eyes in Evansville and the Kentucky Hills, the only advantage to the position is that both flanks are more or less guarded by the river, and the rear is a long stretch of muddy ground pointing like an extended tongue towards Evansville between the loops of the Ohio. A pair of the city's dairy farms are now under occupation. One serves as headquarters and the other as a field hospital. The previous night, the brigade was lucky enough to catch a barge heading upriver. A quick canoe raid by the wolves later, the barge's engine was in their possession, along with the cargo. The raiders were hoping for corn and meat. Instead, they found a load of sorghum, sugar, and coffee. So, the morning camp now smells of fresh coffee, well-sweetened and creamy, thanks to the dairy cows. The chance to get the brigade across in the darkness and confusion of their arrival evaporated as Evansville's tiny brownwater navy took up positions and shot up the tug. So the men went through the tiresome task of building breastworks and digging ditches, each man wondering if the long chase is done, if this is the last entrenchment. Not enough are in any condition to care. The men joked that they weren't in the last ditch, simply because the last ditch was full of muddy Ohio River water and collapsed every time they tried to deepen it. This bit of river had one advantage, however. The Currians who ran Evansville evidently feared attack from their neighbors up the Ohio or across the river in Kentucky, for the river loops in front of the city and the waterfront were a network of mines, obstacles, booms, and floating guard platforms that constantly shifted place. Only Evansville pilots knew the route that would take watercraft safely through the maze. According to Valentine's Kentucky scouts, this was the one stretch of river where they wouldn't encounter artillery boats and patrol craft. The Currians of Evansville clung tenaciously to their ownership of these river bends, squeezing every advantage they could from their control of the loops by exacting small tolls for passage up to the ordnance or down to the Mississippi. Valentine thought it might just be possible to slip across the river and disappear into the woods and hills and swamps of poorly controlled southern Illinois, where at least he and the Moondaggers would be met with equal hostility by the native double-blood Groggs. But Evansville's flotilla of tiny gunboats and the news that more craft of the river patrol waited on the far bank downriver stifled that hope. Touring the defensive positions with Colonel Bloom, exhausted and bloodless in the passenger seat of her command car and able to do little more than nod, he found himself giving in to despair. Their situation grew worse, practically by the hour. The Moondaggers had reinforced their left, ready to defend his most likely breakout alley, and the Wolves reported signs of troops being gathered for a knockout blow from the right. A boxer's stance, poking him from the left as the right readied to lash out. Valentine was woken from a sleep that wasn't amounting to much and requested to report to the command tent. He entered, still buttoning his uniform coat thrown over his legworm leathers. Several guard officers had already gathered, and more were coming. Tika and another grizzled legworm rider were taking turns slicing hunks of cheese with a knife and alternating bites of the cheese and hard biscuit. All eyes were on a boy of 13 or 14, stripped down to his underwear, who stood drinking a steaming beverage and shivering with blankets wrapped around his bony shoulders and feet. Rand looked up at Valentine as he sat.
Thought you'd like to hear this kid's story. We pulled him out of the river when we were setting fish traps.
Pulled nothing. I swam the whole way.
Go on, son.
When are you boys coming?
Coming?
You're with the Liberation, right? Underground says that all of Kentucky's rising. We're listening on the AM radio. Some of us made crystal sets. They took the transmitter at Bowling Green and are talking about all those Moondagger throats that got cut at their supply depot south of Frankfort.
How do we know you're telling the truth?
They're street fighting in Evansville. Some of the OPs came over to our side, hit the downtown armory. We burned a representative when it ran into the mayor's city house. They're looking for its bones now.
You say Kentucky is rising.
Of course. We thought you were part of that.
Are we a part of it, Bloom?
If we're not, we sure as hell will be by dawn.
What else can you tell us, son?
Except for the River Guard, there's not much in the way of troops in town. Just some riot police holding the Kerr Pinnacle. They called up most everyone they could trust from the area into the militia and sent them across the river. Hospitals in Frankfort and Lexington and Louisville are bursting with the wounded. The ordnance is mobilizing. They're scared legworms will be crossing the Ohio and into their state. My chief says to tell you that he's got boats and a couple of old barges. We can rig lines from the bridge and get you across if your guns can clear the river.
What's your name?
Conroy. HT, Youth Vanguard, but I'm only in it for the sports trips. Quit now, I hope. Vanguard service is just a rotten apple, shiny on the outside.
Bloom studied the brigade's defensive positions on her map. A few of the companies had been bled down to little more than platoons. A careful assessment of the mortar readiness status sheet would bring either tears or laughter.
Valentine, can we get one more fight out of the brigade, do you think?
I'll ask him.
It's another gaslighting. This greasy little squirt's eyeing up a brass ring.
Hey!
Enough. Valentine, take your old company and go across the river and offer assistance. If we can catch a break in the city, safely tuck away our wounded, we can make that dash into Illinois and get to the Mighty Miss.
Define assistance, sir. If it's to be combat to clear the city, I'd like a bear team at least. If they're holed up in the manner this boy describes, I'll need demolition gear, too.
Just get over there and make an assessment. Use your judgment. We've got those two big guns we captured. Might as well use them for something other than blind fire on crossroads behind us.
They had crossed the river in the dead of night in an unlit barge, downriver, and marched through a muddy, overgrown tangle of long-dead industry on the riverbank to the west side of town. Evansville was in shambles. Bodies hung from the street lamps. One torn-frocked churchman still clutched his Bible in the grip of rigor mortis as he twirled in the fall breeze. What was left of the Kurian Order, with their few troops pulled out to fill gaps in the Moondagger lines and their populace burning and score-settling, had retreated to the bowl-like bulk of the Civic Center. The resistance had power, water. Valentine even passed a hospital with big spray-painted triage signs for illiterates bringing in wounded. Barrels full of farm produce crept along the sidewalks, distributing food to small patrols and sentry teams. Charcoal-fueled pickups brought in gear, scavenged or improvised weapons. There were workshops fixing up firefighting equipment with bullet shields so that an assault might advance under cover of water sprayed into windows. Parts of the city might be burning, but Evansville appeared to be functioning with a good deal more organization and energy than he'd expected. Valentine met men who worked in machine shops and fertilizer plants. Fertilizer plants could be converted to the manufacture of high explosives. How long would it take some of Evansville's workshops to convert to the production of mortar shells? Valentine made contact with the local resistance at an observation post set up on the roof of a bombed-out school. A trio of a butcher, a teacher, and the man who ran the main telephone office introduced themselves as belonging to the Evansville Resistance Lodge. Valentine huddled with Jones, the telephone operator, as Rand set up the fire control observation station and tested radio communications.
The holdouts are holed up in the Civic Center. We cut off their water and juice. Of course, I think they got a reserve. Some kind of emergency plan is in effect. A cop prisoner told us that they had 3 days of water. That's how long they're supposed to be able to hold out in an emergency until help arrives from Indianapolis or Louisville.
Who's left in there?
Middle management types who were in the militia. Local law enforcement, youth vanguard, paramilitary, auxiliary. Go ahead, blow them out of there. Won't nobody miss them.
He got the nod from Rand. Valentine had shelling from the big guns march up Main Street toward the Civic Center. The last one impacted just inside the barricade. He'd made his point. Valentine examined the Civic Center through a pair of binoculars. A pathetic assortment of cars piled up on the sidewalks around it, along with dropped bundles and half-unpacked trunks. Entire families had retreated to the security of the big building. In panic, or by design, the Evansville Quislings had assembled a barricade out of the civilian and order enforcement vehicles, stringing barbed wire through broken windows and between fenders. Dead bodies hung here and there on the wire. Blackbirds shamelessly feasted on the detritus of desperate valor. He couldn't blow the remaining Quislings out without killing their kids with them. He couldn't drop 155mm shells on a bunch of kids and fill the approaches to the Civic Center with a mixture of dead civilians and his company. That left talking. A string of men emerged ant-like from a utility hole mid-street and made a dash for the Civic Center.
Cease fire! Cease fire!
Luckily, it was poor shooting. They only got one. The others made it to the safety of the barbed wire and vehicle necklace around the building. Valentine waved over at one of the runners. The man was hunched behind a burned-out car driven up on the curb outside the Civic Center.
God damn it. Go on and get him! Nobody's shooting! Just let us get to our people, too!
Really?
You have my word!
The soldiers dragged their man out of the street, and the Evansville mob got their own. Some resistance men, pinned down beneath a school bus, took the opportunity to return to their own lines.
Rand, I'm trusting you to keep things from getting out of hand. Someone takes a pot shot at me, and I want a sniper duel. We're back to trading machine gun fire in no time. They drop me. Give this to Smoke.
Let me go, sir.
You're too slow a target, Patel. And Rand, it would be a tragedy if someone put a bullet through your double helping of brains. Colonel Bloom gave her orders to me.
Valentine walked out into the center of the street under a white flag tied to his sword scabbard.
Can I speak to whoever's in charge in there? I represent the United Free Republics, Kentucky Military Assistance Expedition.
Valentine had been wondering what to call the forces across the river. The improvised name sprang from his lips without involving his brain, evidently.
Who shot? Tell that dumb shit to cut it out. He's got a white flag.
Killing me won't give you another day of water and power in there. We'll just start the fighting again. Don't see that's gotten you much so far, and there's artillery being set up across the river. How many shells is it going to take to collapse that big roof?
Valentine wondered if there'd be an instant's realization of his folly if the marksman decided to put the next one between his eyes. Would that be better than having part of his face torn off, or a bullet through the neck? Valentine felt busted ribs and burned a finger on the hot bullet embedded in the woven reaper cloth on his vest. It felt like someone had performed exploratory surgery with a jackhammer on his chest. Valentine felt content to lay in the street for a moment, holding up the white flag like a dead man with a lily. He let his wolf hearing play along the other side of the barricade.
Quit firing! I'll shoot the next man who fires!
That's treason, Doc Vol. Kill or die order, remember?
The man who gave that order quit on us 2 days ago, you noticed.
I'm trying to save lives here.
Valentine fell to the ground in front of the bus barricading the main entrance. Barbed wire hung off it like bunting.
I'm right here if anyone wants to chat. Does that kill or die order apply to your kids? Maybe we can get them out of there at least.
The bullet punched through the far side of the bus. Valentine slid to put the engine block between himself and the sniper.
Goddamn, cease fire!
We got the guy. It's safe to proceed if you're still willing.
Still ready to talk.
We're sending a party out to talk under a white flag.
Valentine looked at the advertisements running along the roof edge of the bus. Church fertility treatments, infant formula, exhortations to join the youth vanguard, warnings against black market deals, profit to the enemy, poverty for your friends, and invites for the sick and halt to enjoy a refreshing sojourn to the Carolinas and the best medical care east of the Mississippi. A photo of a smiling silver-haired couple in beachwear, lounging in chaises under an umbrella, he with a cast on his leg, her with a cannula and IV hanging from a mount shaped like a flamingo, had a buxom nurse serving what looked like tropical drinks. Visitors to Evansville were invited to see the Eternal Flame at Affirmation Park and add their names to the Wall of Hope for a small NUC donation. The Kurian Order in microcosm.
Okay, we're right here. You can come around as long as there's no funny business.
Forgot it was your guys who just tried to kill me.
It's safe. Come around.
A trio of men, two in law enforcement blue and one with a clean coat thrown over dirty collar and tie, stood with their backs to the other side of the bus.
I'm Vol, senior captain, Evansville Security and Enforcement.
Vol had a huge nose that made his eyes look small and swinish in comparison. Valentine noticed numerous breaks in the greasy proboscis, a beak of scar tissue and whiskey veins.
Name's Valentine, Major, Southern Command.
This here's emergency militia leader Albano and temporary Mayor Bell.
I was clerk of resource allocation. I never carried a gun or signed a retirement warrant my whole life.
No separate deal, so don't even try it, Bell. What's your offer?
No more fighting between you guys and the resistance. That's my deal. Come out without your guns. I'll put any dependents under supervision of Southern Command personnel. They'll come to no harm.
What about us?
It's up to you and the Indiana boys.
I say we hang him, just like they did with Sobish. No more flags of truce, just delays the inevitable.
Canada Albano, understand, Valen, whatever. We've got nothing to lose and orders to kill any rebel we can get our hands on.
A hard rain's gonna fall here, just a couple more days. A hard rain.
I'm sick of that weather report, Albano. Where's that relief column out of Indy? Tomorrow, tomorrow, always tomorrow.
Shut up, you two.
Lingren said the Moondaggers asked for it, crossing the river into Kentucky to secure their lines for the retreat. We're blood-piped. Let's refugee north to Indy. Even if a new guide comes, he'll have his own people. Better to start at the bottom rung somewhere else and get caught up in a reorg here.
You're willing to let us walk right out of here?
I'm sure that could be arranged. If you turn over your weapons and gear intact, I'll Try to make the local resistance see the advantage of getting their hands on your guns. But are you sure of the reception you'll get in Indianapolis or wherever you end up? You might be surplus to requirements. Someone's got to take a fall for a debacle in a city the size of Evansville. Might just be you all. Seems to me you men have two alternatives. Stay here and fight it out, waiting for help that's not coming, or surrender yourselves to your fellow Hoosiers.
601.
Fight or die, they told you. Take them up on it. Fight them for a change.
Renegade and get picked off on some Reaper's manhunt, or get a stake pounded up my ass by a vengeance team? That's a painful way to go.
I'm wearing what's left of one of those Reapers you're so scared of. Join the fight against the Currians. I lead a bunch of fighting men that's nothing but formal order. I can always use more men. You might get killed. But if you fall, you'll fall on the right side and you won't get recycled into pig feed. Once you've proven in combat, you're a new man, so to speak. We'll give you a new identity if you like.
Valentine was exceeding his orders and knew it. But if it would spare a mutual slaughter... Valentine noticed that both sides had advanced on the bus, scraps of white tied to tips of rifles or held aloft at the ends of bits of pipe fashioned into spiked clubs. The resistance was more numerous, the Currian Order forces better armed, facing each other across abandoned vehicles and curlicue tangles of razor wire. The Quislink looked a rough lot. Of course there would be the bullies, the cowards, and the lickspittles. The Currian Order attracted such. But he had a tough, experienced bunch of officers now. They'd keep them in line. The battered, big-nosed leader looked at Valentine with suspicious eyes.
Trust comes hard, I know. I spent time under the Currians myself. They always garland their deals with a bunch of roses. What did they tell you before you joined enforcement? Quick path to a cushy office and a luxury car? Any of that come true? I'm telling you, you'll have it hard, but you'll be able to look yourselves in the mirror. No more bundling neighbors off to collection vans.
I want all this written up on paper with some signatures. And I want us to keep all our light weapons and sidearms. It's got to say that too. Every man gets a choice. Join you, surrender, or walk out.
Save us the effort of finding guns for you.
Valentine left a platoon of his company under Ediak and Patel to organize the surrendered Quislings and returned across the river in a small boat, heartened. A barge would follow, laden with food. Mostly preserved legworm meat rations marked WHAM, high protein, in cheery yellow lettering. The barge would bring the wounded back, where the Evansville Hospital could give them a bed and rest at last. He called a staff conference and gave the good news to Bloom, trying to stay awake and alert. When it was done, he felt as tired as Bloom looked. She tilted her head back and closed her eyes.
We can go home.
Hell with that. Got a secure base in this country and they don't. Let's go on the offensive.
With the brigade worn to pieces?
Now's our best shot, Colonel. If we can buy some peace and quiet to get things organized to support us in Evansville, we can cut river traffic on the Ohio and give some real help to the uprising in Kentucky. Every time we've had a chance to run, we've run, and where's it got us? Javelin ends with a whimper as the men pile onto barges and motorboats under shell fire. If Javelin's gonna die, I want it to die hard, trying to do what it was designed for, to establish a new freehold. If we can take the Moondagger main body with us, Kentucky has a chance. We've got the technical people, even if they've lost a lot of their gear on the retreat. We've got the wolves and bears, even Smoke and a cat or two.
I wouldn't want to be up against this brigade.
Amen, Gamecock.
Fingers around the enemy's throat and teeth locked on hide. God grant me the strength to get out of this chair one more time. Valentine, will you help me draw up a plan for your clutch hit?
In this situation, it'll be a simple one, sir.
If you do this, what's left of the Kentucky Alliance will be with you. Believe it or not, we've still got riders from all the five tribes. Most are either bulletproof or gunslingers. Tika's worked out some kind of command structure. Bitter enders all. They want their ton of flesh from the Moondaggers.
I shot a javelin into the air. It fell to earth, I knew not where. Valentine kept the doggerel to himself. They could hardly move anymore, so they might as well fight. Where javelin finally landed would, must be remembered. One way or another. Valentine decided it was time to end the rumors that were already flying around camp. The men sat on their sleeping mats in neat rows, some eating, some nodding off, all seemingly enjoying the first true rest they'd had in as long as they could remember. He climbed up onto the roof of cranky old Comanche, the sole remaining truck.
Got a message from Colonel Bloom, men. We crossed the Mississippi to help the locals create a new freehold. I don't know how you feel about it, but we came here to do a job. We ran hard across Kentucky on the way there and then fought our way back. Our trail is marked by graves. Some of ours, lots of theirs. Headquarters just received some startling news. Evansville's been taken by the local resistance. We've got barges full of grain, pork, medical supplies, everything we're short of. They're short of training and guns. On this side of the river, Kentucky's as sick of the Moondaggers as we are. Legworm clans between Bowling Green and the Appalachians are fighting hard. Not raiding, not burning a few bridges to give them some negotiating leverage with the Currians. They're in it for keeps. The reason the city there fell is that most of their militia's been impressed by the Moondaggers. What's left is willing to come over to the cause. You've had some hard fights. You all know you've given it to the Moondaggers even harder. They're filling out those positions opposite with militia ordered to kill or die. Their division isn't even able to hold an entire line at our front. I think we can guess what they mean to do. Hold our beat-down brigade here until they can reestablish their lines of communication and supply, keeping their fingers crossed that we'll surrender. It's been 3 days. The wolves keep hearing activity on the other side of their hills. Why haven't they attacked? Last Chance told us that he won't stop until we're dead. Let's shut him up for good. They're the ones worried about how much worse it'll get tomorrow, not us. Now, I know what you're thinking. You've heard this story before. A populace rising, all we have to do is go help them, midwives to a new freehold. I'm telling you what I've heard from the resistance. Maybe it's wrong, maybe it's lies, maybe they're trying to get us out of our ditches and into the open. Let's take them up on it. Put their money where Last Chance's mouth is. I wonder how often in the history of the Moondaggers they've been on the receiving end of an assault. Bears and the spearhead. Wolves snapping at their flanks, and a real assault by trained men coming in behind mortar fire.
And a cat opening up that asshole in the swinging chair. If you boys will loan me a couple of claymores from the front of your positions, I'll see if I can't plant a couple around the Moondaggers' headquarters.
I've told you what I know. Maybe they're setting us up for another sucker punch. Fine. I'm tired of running anyway. But I don't think it's another trick. I've got a feeling this is the day. This is the day when the tide turns. I'm asking you all to turn and fight with me. Our retreat's over. From now on, it's forward. If we fall, we'll fall with honor. Quiet, Javelin Brigade! Let's not do anything to spoil the surprise.
During the day, they came under some distracting shellfire. They were 120mm mortars, Valentine knew, having become intimately familiar with the sound of mortar calibers on Big Rock Hill. If anything, it helped to settle Valentine's mind. An army baiting them to attack by feigning weakness wouldn't waste resources on random harassing fire. Duvalier made a quick scout of the enemy right that night. Valentine heard her report in the new assault headquarters, far forward, masquerading as an artillery observation post. They were close enough forward to draw sniper fire, so they had to keep their heads behind logs and brush.
That greased-up kid is right about one thing. There's nothing but some nervous farmers and shopkeepers in front of you here, stiffened by Moondagger units behind. They pull the best of them back to help with the disorder in their rear.
How do you know that?
I was close enough to taste splatter when one of them took a piss. I was able to pick up a couple of conversations.
It's not all you did. I can smell the blood on you.
They had a big machine gun backing up their line with a couple of our Moondagger friends manning it. Don't know if it was there to keep the men up front from running or not, but the loader was asleep and the gunner was jacking off. Couldn't resist a target of opportunity.
Valentine communicated her report over the field phone. Bloom decided to put into effect the assault they'd begun planning after dismissing the boy for a meal and a return swim. They'd leave a skeleton line on the right opposite the Moondaggers and gather for the last effort on the left. Duvalier shoved some legworm jerky in her mouth and had a cup of real coffee.
I'll take those claymores now, if you got them.
Gonna be a hero at last?
No, I just like the odds. Their sentry positions out there are about as much use as a screen door in a flood. I'll plant the claymores in their headquarters dugout and wait for a full house. Just hope your guns don't drop a shell on me.
No ammo reserve. It'll be the shortest barrage in history.
She disappeared, and Valentine walked the positions, anxious. Especially after an illumination flare fired. Maybe Duvalier flushed a deer or threw a rock to get the Quisling militia looking in the wrong direction for her final wiggle through the lines. He inspected the bears. Gamecock had them in three circles. Chieftain already had his war paint on. Silvertip was tightening the spiked leather dogskin gloves he liked to wear in a fight. The wolves had already left. Half of Moitana's under his lieutenant command to reinforce the right, just in case, and the other half to move along the riverbank and see if they could slip around between the Ohio and the Quisling positions on the left. Valentine authorized Moitana to start the action. The rest of Javelin would follow them in, with Gamecock's bears leading the way. Valentine's company was at the forefront. They'd creep forward and provide covering fire for the bears.
You ready, Rand?
Absolutely. Thanks for the chance, sir. I won't let you down.
All right, then. Let's move out. Sergeant Major Patel?
Company! Fall in!
Another dirty job. Where did you find 50 caliber ammo, Rutherford?
That little redhead of yours dropped a couple of boxes off after her last scout. She's stronger than she looks.
Nice of her.
She said I was to kiss you when the attack started, sir.
I see you shaved for it.
Turns out Ford here was some kind of trained servant for an officer. I started shaving and he got all excited, so I let him do it. Wasn't much of a beard anyway.
Someone might mistake you for a soldier and shoot at you.
Just want this war to be over one way or another. If we're hitting the Moondaggers with not much more than guts and bayonets, I thought I might as well look nice, just in case. And it won't end until we quit playing defense and start digging these ticks out of our hide. I caught a little of that speech of yours. I heard the same before. Hope you mean it.
I do. I'm just one major.
With a death sentence, I heard. Stuff like that happens to a lot of good officers. Cocker, organized Archangel. We lost Sang in Virginia.
There's a reason for that?
Troublesome animals in a herd get culled first. That's all I'm saying. Watch yourself, sir.
Take care of yourself, too.
Patel brought up the rear, walking with the help of his canes again. He nodded to Valentine, as though too busy to pause and chat. Valentine trotted over to him.
I thought I left you safe over on the other side of the river.
A lieutenant with a full company of guard walking wounded is helping in Evansville now. They said there was to be a battle. This is my place.
Not with those knees, Sergeant Major.
Cool night. Fall's well on the way now. They're always bad when the weather turns.
Don't go forward with the rest. I want the company on our flank, just in case the Moondaggers launch a counterattack from their positions. Find some good ground where you can hold them up.
Yes, sir. Anything else, sir?
That's all. Except be careful.
When am I not careful?
When you're throwing yourself on top of reapers for a start. Thanks, my friend, for all you've done on this trip.
Just doing what I always do. Seeing to it that young soldiers get to be old soldiers.
Moitana must have found a good target of opportunity. They must have been well behind the titular Quisling line. Valentine picked up the field phone.
General Singh! Repeat, General Singh!
Valentine made note of the time. 4:16. He wondered if the Quisling militia had ever faced an artillery barrage before. Valentine remembered his first hard barrage on that hill overlooking the Arkansas and Little Rock. It made one frightfully aware of just how hard the enemy was trying to kill you. Felt almost like a personal grudge.
Move out!
Valentine felt for the Quislings. Indiana stockholders who wanted more land for their herds, men who wanted to own a trucking company, boys told by their church officiates that militia service was the path to security for their parents and siblings, a good mark for the family record. Rousted out of their beds, told to put on uniforms they wore 6 weeks a year, picking up unwieldy bolt-action rifles fit more for intimidating a mob than turning back Gamecock's raging bears. The odds and ends of the Kentucky Alliance urged their mobile fortifications into action. Just the sight of charging worms might be enough to send most of the Quislings running. They resembled a yellow avalanche moving uncannily uphill. Valentine saw Tika in their midst, expertly hanging off the side of her mount and using her saddle as a rifle rest. Though they were both too tired, dirty, and hungry to do much more but quickly rut and depart like wary rabbits in fox country, Valentine wasn't sure he could even put a name to what they had, but it was something as natural as the fall Kentucky rain and just as cleansing. He thought of the artistic swell of her buttocks. Mad thought, with shells and bullets flying in at least three directions. Valentine was almost pleased by the appearance of the Moondagger artillery, knowing that if all went according to plan, they'd be in the brigade's hands within a few hours. Under the right command, they'd be useful against river traffic, especially if they had some white phosphorus shells that could be set to airburst. The first reports began to come back to headquarters. The militia had simply dissolved into little groups of men lying on their faces, spread eagle and surrendered. There were reports of the Moondaggers doing as much damage to the Quisling militia as javelin. The wolves were finding trails blocked with bodies, shot by their alleged allies as they retreated. It was Glass's kind of operation. No heroism required. Rand approached, looking a little frazzled.
How's your first battle going, Lieutenant?
It's a little more exciting than I'd like, sir.
Valentine spun towards a shallow between a small hill ahead and the beginnings of Kentucky's rollers in the distance. A wave of Moondaggers poured up in a counterattack from the center. The phrase, gleam of bayonets, crossed Valentine's mental transom. The warrior poets were right. It is an unsettling sight when they're pointed at you. Glass's machine guns cut into them, but the Moondaggers ignored their losses, firing back wildly. They fell onto the outer edges of his platoon, fighting with curved dagger and rifle butt. Bee was suddenly beside him, employing her shotguns to deadly effect. Bee grabbed two bayoneted rifles thrust at her and poked the bearded men back, knocking them down like an angry mother snatching up dangerous toys. She tore the long bayonets free, waving one as a club to knock Moondaggers off their feet, and the other to stick them like beetles on styrofoam. Rand fell, a bullet not caring that it cavitated one of the best brains Valentine had ever met. Valentine, vaguely bothered by the stickiness of Rand's blood on his face, did his best to cover V with his submachine gun. As he went to reload, he realized that he just wasted a full magazine of Quickwood bullets. Stupid. The company of guard engineers came forward, firing their light carbines, and Valentine knew that it was over. Wounded Moondaggers, still lashing at their enemies with their knives, were shot and shot again until they quit crawling. Valentine sent Bee to put Rand in the shade of a beat-up medical pickup and get her wounds looked at, had Patel pull the company back together and see about ammunition supply, and then sent a bare report of the repulsed counterattack back to Bloom. Javelin headquarters was on the move to the old Moondagger positions.
Sir, radio report coming in from the wolves. The Moondaggers are running! Running! They're quitting and running hard up the highway to Bowling Green! Their legworm supports are going with them!
Where'll that take them?
They keep heading down that highway, they'll be getting into Mammoth Country.
Wonder what the Mammoth thought about the little catechism from those men the dagger sliced up. I wouldn't want to have my truck break down there.
Wouldn't surprise me if they built a wooden cage or two. It's the end for them.
Not the end. Not even the beginning of the end.
With the Moondaggers broken across Kentucky, and perhaps beaten at last, a fatal crack in the foundation of the Kurian Order had been opened. Like any fault in a structure's foundation, it might not be easily seen or the danger recognized at first. But that first crack would allow more to appear, branching out until the whole edifice crumbled. Even such an awful pyramid as Valentine had spoken of back at Rally Base could be undermined and brought down in time. Valentine hoped he'd live to see the fall.
Vampire Earth, Book 7, Fall with Honor, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2008, Eric E. Frisch. Published by arrangement with Trident Media Group, LLC. All rights reserved.
Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, Tim Getman, Thomas Penny, James Keegan, Christopher Graybill, Julie Ann Elliott, Mort Shelby, Michael Glenn, Dan Stevens, Richard Rowan, Christopher Sheeran, Greg Gorton, Nanette Savard, Thomas Keegan, Joe Brack, Barbara Pinolini, Tim Carlin, Ren Casey, Casey Platt, Terrence Hazelford, Joseph Thornhill, James Lewis, Stephen Carpenter, M.J. Casey, Elizabeth Jernigan, David Coyne, Tony Nam, Drew Kopus, James Konacek, and Dolores King Williams. Book adapted for graphic audio by Matt Jacobs. Directed by Ken Jackson. Dialogue editing and sound design by Temeskin Wubna. Additional music by Brian Patton, Nathaniel Perry, Dan Sondak, and Johan Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Vampire Earth, be sure to look for the Demon Cycle trilogy by Peter V. Brett and the Vata's War series by Elizabeth Moon. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll also find samples of all our Action Punks titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts.
Available now in graphic audio.
What's up?
I've got a case. I need you, Danny.
She pushed the file toward me. There were homicide Lay's photos. Gods above, when was this?
4 months ago. Look past the body.
My eyes moved over the picture. A pile of something wrinkled laid off to one side. Is that what I think? Oh, don't tell me it is.
The fucker flayed her.
Remember! 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 No!
I don't want to remember Rigger Hall. I have done very well for years without remembering.
Welcome to the House of Pain.
Have a nice night.
It is extremely unlikely.
Rigger Hall. I swore I'd never go back.
Dante Valentine, Book 2, Dead Man Rising, Part 1, is available now in graphic audio.
Remember Rigger Hall.
Of all the sources of power we know, the Wolf Bundle is most powerful on Earth. It is our soul. Our power as humans.
I've heard the voices, talked with the stars. Women can no longer be allowed to dictate the ways of the people. It is pollution.
You can't keep blaming starvation on women. I think your dreams are false.
You push too far, Sageroot.
You're no dreamer. No singer. You're nothing but a sick man with delusions.
In 4 days, I shall sing your soul from your body. You shall die.
What are you thinking?
Heavy Beaver hurt the Wolf Bundle. Bad things are loose. I can feel them.
The boy may not be strong enough.
Trust in the circles.
Mother? I'm not me anymore.
Mother?
I can't fight his power.
Mother!
So the moment has come. Let no one doubt the power of my dreaming.
Get him! Get him! He's trying to kill me! You're evil, boy.
Someone bring me a club. Today I cleanse the people, no matter how much blood I have to let.
Enough!
White Calf, witch.
Turn that boy loose!
Vile pollution. Take him. Get him out of here. All of you, get out.
You've made your way, Heavy Beaver. Let's see where it takes you.
Little Dancer, you and I, we've got a lot to talk about.
North America's Forgotten Past, Book 2, People of the Fire, in graphic audio. If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.